It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast. Right,
we're going to stack the card for the weekend in football in just a second here. We've got our first ever Circle of Swarm.
Yeah.
That we're going to do for the Vikings-Texans game on Sunday. 7:20-ish. We'll do that.
Mm.
They're showing the Shohei highlights on TV in here. I really hope he sucks in the postseason. I hope he's the Japanese Aaron Judge. You know, where he's in the regular season, he's hitting
Clayton,
50 bombs, but in the postseason, he's
just
batting 117, eight strikeouts in a series.
Okay, that's what we have to hope for.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this what we've been reduced to? No, I want to see full force throw. Hey, I take it back.
See where he hit that one? I mean, he practically hit it out of the stadium. Oh, my God.
Punched a hole in the roof.
I'll say this. I'm glad that if the Astros have to see Shohei Ohtani, it's not till the World Series. You know,
he seems to have hit his stride, Sean.
Yeah, I think
I wonder, man. I mean, you try to analyze him using anything at all, whether it's like, okay, how much value does he bring as a pitcher versus as a hitter or what have you, or just doing what he's doing at the plate now without having the added workload of pitching.
Yeah.
If I were his advisor. Which I would be a much better and more trustworthy one than his former interpreter.
The translator, yeah.
I might say, hey, man, if what you're looking for is all-time greatness, it's cool, this little thing you do astoundingly well, which is be a two-way player. I might just say, let's just focus on hitting.
That's what's crazy is he's getting paid a salary where he's supposed to be doing both. He's getting $70 million a year. I don't know. Given what he brings marketing-wise to the team, and he gives you a window into a whole nother continent worth of fans, and he's doing 50-50 type things, he might be worth a $70 million even without the pitching.
When you bet, and baseball teams, they factor that in. Now, but as a pitcher, though, too, they factor in the fact that a pitcher puts butts in the seats. People specifically...
I think he does anyways, though.
He does regardless, right? Yeah, people just want to go see Shohei if he's healthy that day.
Yeah, he hits five times and he plays in the field.
If he's up that day.
So I think... we'll see. That's an interesting thought. All right, let's get this card...
Imagine if they kept Yordan.
Huh?
Imagine if they kept Yordan.
Can you imagine
that?
Oh, my God. And Shohei bats leadoff, and Yordan bats two quite a bit for the Astros. Can you imagine the first two hitters in your lineup being Shohei Ohtani and Yordan Alvarez?
Yeah. Well, Yordan's not that fast, so
Underratedly fast. All right, so the card this weekend, we're going to get to the Texans here in just a few minutes in our first ever Circle of Swarm. But games outside of the Texans this weekend, and I got a few in here that are future Texan opponents. I've got some in here that are just intriguing games. I kind of stack it like it's a WrestleMania card. So I've got the undercard here, like the first guys coming out of the chute, and these are both early games, I believe. I am interested in Chicago at Indy this weekend just because it's the Texans' two opponents they've
played.
Common
opponents.
Yeah.
You start to do that thing, which you shouldn't do.
I just want to see what it looks
like. Almost like you're the college football playoff committee, where the whole transitive property thing doesn't really work in the NFL the way it does in college football rankings. And I'm curious, because one big thing about the Colts is, in that first game, the Texans ran all over them. And you're thinking, all right, Texans might have figured something out in the run game.
Yeah, woo! Yeah.
And then last week, the Texans don't run the ball well at all against the Colts or against the Bears defense. And meanwhile, the Colts got destroyed on the ground defensively.
By the Packers.
Yeah. So we'll see. Okay, all right. Was that Texans... If the Colts get destroyed by the rushing attack of the Bears, then I'm not going to feel that awesome about the Texans rushing attack.
I was going to say that the Texans have made life uncomfortable for both of these quarterbacks in this game, Caleb Williams and Anthony Richardson. If you had to pick one that gets things straightened out in this game,
oh boy,
is it Caleb Williams or Anthony? The answer may be none of the above, but if one were to do that, which one do you think it is?
It's weird. Long term, I feel better about Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. Anthony Richardson, though, in the short term, as I've said before, even if he never cracks 50% completion percentage this season, which he has not yet. He was right at 50% last week. On any given Sunday, he is absolutely terrifying. Those sacks, it wouldn't have been seven sacks against Anthony Richardson this last week.
Agreed.
The Texans sacked Caleb Williams, and as great as Caleb Williams is at getting out of the pocket, Caleb Williams very much realized, it's hard in the NFL to scramble for yardage.
Yep.
Anthony Richardson on any given Sunday terrifies me, no matter how bad he is as a quarterback. So in the short term, I'll say Anthony Richardson, but I do... I'm kind of coming back now that the Texans don't face Caleb Williams again. I want to get in his corner a little bit.
You do?
Yeah, I do feel like he's getting the brunt of a whole lot of stuff that wasn't necessarily his fault, and I can put myself in his shoes at the end of the game and talking to CJ Stroud where I just want to get to the locker room, and you know, I don't know.
Orlovsky had the best take. We're going to play this later in the show. Orlovsky had the best take on the CJ Caleb thing yesterday, which is neither guy's wrong. Like, CJ's trying to do him a solid by giving him advice. Caleb's frustrated because he lost a game. Like,
yeah.
People are trying to point fingers like one guy has to be wrong in this situation.
Right.
It's really silly. The other undercard game in the early games on Sunday, unlikely battle of undefeated. A little like this. I think people aren't surprised the Texans are 2-0. I think they're surprised the Vikings are 2-0. Similarly, I think people are probably a little surprised that both the Chargers and the Steelers are 2-0 right out of the chute.
And that,
they play each other in Pittsburgh on Sunday.
The only unsurprising thing about the Steelers is that this is what Mike Tomlin has been doing ever since Ben Roethlisberger got really old.
Winning ugly.
And winning with Ben Roethlisberger, late-stage Ben Roethlisberger.
That was ugly, too.
Winning with Kenny Pickett, making the playoffs with all of these non-quarterbacks. And that's what they're doing defensively. TJ Watt seems to be almost like a key. He can single-handedly help you win football games.
Like his brother used to.
Yeah, so the Chargers versus Pittsburgh. I'm in a weird spot with Jim Harbaugh, too. Harbaugh's one of these guys that sometimes I want him to do really well. Other times I just want him to be gone and out of my life. But I'm pulling for Jim Harbaugh.
I'm pulling for Jim Harbaugh because of this. Well, two reasons. One, he's fun. It's fun having him back in the NFL.
He's so weird, and he's getting weirder.
He's quirky, yeah. But number two, I'd like for there to be a team that's challenging the Chiefs in the AFC West.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that also means they're challenging the Texans in the AFC at large, but it would be nice if the Chiefs, who have not been a superhuman regular season team, it would be nice if there were a team that put some regular season pressure on them and maybe even win the division. And now the Chiefs have to go on the road in the early part of the postseason for a change.
Just as the Astros have an advantage in the playoffs because of so much experience in the playoffs, that's what the Chiefs have now, where there's nothing dirty about it, but it feels unfair. It unfair. There's nothing wrong with it or anything. They've earned it, but it feels unfair. So, yeah, there's no part of me that thinks, well, I want to win a Super Bowl, but only if we go through the Chiefs. No.
Screw that.
No. Anybody and everybody can knock them off. I'm cool with it.
I was all ready to play the Titans back in 2019 when they had the 24-0 lead on the Chiefs in the divisional round. That would have been a home game at NRG Stadium to go to the Super Bowl if they'd held on to that lead.
You know what? As a player, I was on a team that was 14-2 in the regular season.
That's right.
But we couldn't beat the Titans. The Titans had our number. They had Mark Brunell's number in a big way, the 99 Jaguars. And we ended up facing the Titans in the playoffs. They beat us. It's the only team that beat us that year. I would have had zero shame.
14-2, knocked out in the playoffs, and all three losses were to the same team.
To the Titans,
that's
right.
That's incredible. Yeah.
And had an offense that could have kept up with the Rams, I think, that year. So it was,
You guys did.
I mean, like, in the moment, it wasn't like I was like, oh, I don't want to face the Titans. But looking back on it in hindsight, I wish that was the lateral by Frank Whitecheck versus the Bills.
It was. That was the Music City Miracle.
Yeah. Like, that was the one thing.
That was
how the Titans won that game and played us that year. Yeah.
Wow. I'd forgotten about putting those pieces together.
Just watching that game with a young Brandy S. Unverdorben in Orlando in her apartment.
Really?
Yeah.
How deep were you guys into your relationship at that point? How long had you been together at that point?
I think only like a few months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was she more impressed that you were on a good football team? Like,
probably,
did it help?
Yeah.
Did it help that you guys won 14 games that
year? Yeah.
Did you tell her it's not always going to be like this?
Listen,
there may
Brandy.
Be an expansion
team.
I know
you're new to
line.
This NFL. It's not always like this, yeah. We might not be able to stay in Northeastern and Central Florida forever, even though I know that's your dream.
This is your Shangri-La.
I know it's your dream to own a big meth operation in Central Florida, but
this is your Xanadu.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, the mid-card for this weekend. So we got the undercard. I like the Chicago and Indianapolis games. I like that Chargers and Pittsburgh game a lot. New Orleans is another team that I don't think a lot of people saw being undefeated 2 weeks into the season. Hell, Dennis Allen was the number one most likely coach to be fired first on all the odds boards. And now here we are, and I would say that the other coach in this game is on a much hotter seat than Dennis Allen's seat right now, and that is Nicholas Sirianni of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Eagles at the New Orleans Saints. This is, boy, coming off of the Monday night game where they gave up the drive at the end of the game to Kirk Cousins,
yeah.
This is a tipping point early on here for the Eagles.
It is. And
they're 1-1, and they're going to undefeated New Orleans.
It was an offseason full of speculation about the relationship between Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni,
That's right.
Of that. And now the Saints, I have no conflicts about rooting for. I will 100%. Look, it's the NFC, and I would love for nothing more for Saints fans than to be able to enjoy this out of nowhere. Clint Kubiak-led offense, Derek Carr, redemption story. That would be fun.
Can I give you a reason to not root for the Saints?
Yeah.
Trevor
Penning?
No, I didn't think of that, but yes, Trevor Penning. If they turn out to be really good, the Super Bowl is in New Orleans this year.
Oh, yeah.
Which would be a blast if the Texans were not in it. But the Texans have a chance to be in it. Boy, can you imagine a I'm getting way ahead of myself now. Houston and New Orleans.
Yeah.
Houston and New Orleans in New Orleans.
Everybody can drive. There'd be so many Houston fans there, not even for the game, but just to go party.
The French Quarter and Mardi Gras the next week.
That'd be a good time.
It'd be a really good time.
That would be fun. Boy, but okay. The last time we had a home team, quote-unquote, play in the Super Bowl, it was Tampa in the COVID year.
Correct.
So we had placards and digital renditions of fans in the stands. It wasn't really. Now, and the crowd isn't likely going to be heavily New Orleans favorited.
Right, it's a corporate
crowd.
But,
you know, just by being at home, practicing in your own facility, all that stuff, I think it probably does. In that week where there's so many distractions, it depends on the composition of the team.
Yeah.
One theory back when I was a player about why New Orleans could never get good was that there were just too many distractions. Young men were living in a city where pretty much anything went, and it was hard to get those guys to be fully engaged all the time.
New Orleans is favored by 3, so the betting community sees these teams as equals right now. You get 3 points for home field advantage. So on a neutral field, this game would be a coin flip. Do you believe this game is a who do you like in this game?
At this point, I'm not so sure with Vic Fangio as the defensive coordinator of the Eagles. And we've seen the Eagles struggle defensively before Vic Fangio got there. But Vic is one of these coordinators that if he has the right guys on his defense, it's awesome. But if he doesn't have the right guys and they don't really latch on to and buy into his style, it's not so great. And so as of right now, Philadelphia hasn't really proven that they're ready for a Vic Fangio defense.
Yep.
So I will go with New Orleans.
I'm with you on that.
I pull for a Kubiak as well.
Kubiak,
offensive coordinator for the Saints.
Yeah. He'll be one and done. Someone's going to hire him as a head coach in the offseason.
If they keep this up.
Yep. Yeah. If they keep this up, yeah. Okay, we're down to the semi-main event and the main event for the weekend, non-Texans games. A lot of people on paper before the season probably would have put this one as the main event for the weekend just because of the two teams involved. And yet, one of them's 0-2, and the other one is a very shaky 1-1, having lost to the Saints by 25 at home last week, and that is Baltimore at Dallas. I mean, you think if we think Philly is on a tipping point right now, Baltimore is really on a tipping point right now. 0-2, and going to a stadium where last week, notwithstanding, over the last couple of years, Dallas has been unbeatable at home, and I would imagine they're going to come out loaded for bear coming off of that horrible performance last week.
I think this is a classic back against the wall. Baltimore, who we saw last year, didn't click immediately and then started to pour it on. I think Baltimore gets Mike McCarthy fired. It doesn't mean McCarthy's
not Monday.
Not going to get fired, you know, at the facility right after the game or anything. But down the line, this will be the one where Jerry Jones starts looking at Bobby Slowick or Clint Kubiak. I think Bobby Slowick looks enough like Jason Garrett that Jerry Jones is going to be like, this is a lot of Jason Garrett, but smart.
This is a reasonable facsimile of what Jason Garrett used to be, so I'm fine with this.
He's actually competent.
He's competent.
I think this is the guy.
I like his boyish looks with the ball cap and the long sleeve t-shirts on as well.
I would love for Bobby Slowick if he got just absolutely money whipped by Jerry Jones in the offseason.
I wouldn't.
Bobby Slowick didn't know. Look, he's going to go somewhere.
Yeah,
he's going to end up somewhere else.
Yeah, that's true.
And Jerry Jones, there are challenges as a head coach and going up there, but their personnel department does a really good job of getting really good football players on there.
Yeah.
And I think if Jerry Jones throws $30 million a year in his face or
ooh,
something.
Yeah.
Take that money. Take that money, Bobby.
Life a year is, for slow.
Life is short, man. It's growing shorter for others.
Oh, yeah, man. So you think Baltimore beats Dallas this weekend?
I think they do. What's the line?
The line. It's a good question. It's in Dallas. The line is Baltimore minus one. So yeah. Baltimore is favored in this game. Yeah. On the road in Dallas, Baltimore's favored in this game.
Look, that Dallas defense, which questions about just exactly how the defense coordinator, Mike Zimmer, was going to do with this. Yeah. This personnel group and everything, and it looked as bad as it could possibly look last week.
Yep.
I think it's an ugly day for the Cowboys defense.
This early in the season, I tend to look at games like this that's a coin flip, Baltimore minus one. I just go, okay, what sounds crazier?
Yeah.
Baltimore being 0-3 or the Cowboys being 1-2? And Baltimore being 0-3 sounds outlandish to me. you know, that sounds crazy. So I go with I can see the Cowboys being 1-2. Baltimore being 0-3 does not register with
me.
Plus,
there's a little bit of a personal thing here where I was stumping hard for Derrick Henry this offseason, and so far, versus Saquon Barkley, not so good for
me. We're losing that battle.
Yeah, come on, Derrick Henry.
Yeah, get your crap together. Get it together.
I'm going to call him this afternoon.
Yeah, let him know.
Give him a tough love pep talk.
Let him know, yeah. All right, and this one, the main event of the weekend for me, and for Texan fans, should be. I know this is not as probably sexy a game as Baltimore at Dallas, but the Texans' next two opponents, both here at NRG Stadium, by the way, the next two after Minnesota this weekend, play each other this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Jacksonville is in Buffalo. It's the Monday night football game. And Jacksonville, again, we're talking about these 0-2 teams. You know, Doug Peterson, if they lose this game, is probably going to find himself at the top of a lot of hot seat lists there.
That's another.
They're paying Trevor Lawrence $55 million a year now to win games like this.
That's another reason I would like to see Bobby Slowick go to Dallas, is that I don't want to see Bobby Slowick
in the AFC
be the guy that finally just turns it around and gets the absolute most out of Trevor
Lawrence.
That's
a great point.
Yeah,
that's a great point. The Bills are favored by 5.5 in this game. I'm a little surprised it's only 5.5, just given how bad Jacksonville has looked the first 2 weeks of the season offensively, and how good the Bills have looked other than the first quarter and a half against the Cardinals. The six of the eight quarters they played this year, they boat raced the team that they're playing.
This is going to be a fun week next week in
leading up to Jacksonville.
Leading up to Jacksonville, because you got Monday Night Football which features your two next opponents.
Yes.
You get to scout them on Monday night.
Tuesday.
Yeah, there's a lot. We're still going to be... So we're going to have to turn the page real quickly, Sean.
Yeah.
Quick turnaround, okay?
Good.
We'll have a victory Monday.
Yeah.
We'll give out our awards and everything. And then it's on to the Bills right after... Or excuse me, on to the Jaguars after that.
On to the Jags, then on to the Bills after that, yeah. What do you think about this game, Jags and Bills?
Bills are five and a half point
favorites.
I think that Sean McDermott is another guy that was probably more on the hot seat than... It felt, and so far, maybe this is his best head coaching job, because they lost people in the offseason, including Stephon Diggs.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
but it also, they're doing that classic thing that we've seen over and over again, whether it's Eli Manning or Deshaun Watson or whomever else. When they lose one of their big receiving threats, they become better overall quarterbacks, in that they're distributing the ball. That Sean McDermott's defense has recovered from some of their offseason losses. So, I like the Bills in this.
Some follow-up to some of the things we're talking about here. Then we'll get to our first ever Circle of Swarm that we're doing for the Vikings game on Sunday. Couple people pointing out, and I started to look this up, and then I was like, man, but the Rams won a Super Bowl at home as well in 2021.
Oh, that's right.
At SoFi. Yeah. So not just Tampa, but the Rams have done that too. It had never happened forever, and then it happened in back-to-back years.
How could I forget that? Because they made such a big deal too about all the local guys. The four hours
of sleep and traveling all day yesterday. That's how you forgot about it.
Three and a half hours of sleep.
Don't kill yourself over it. Let's see here. A couple other follow-ups to impossible to win in the Superdome when it's rocking. I don't know.
Yeah, but it won't be rocking in a Super Bowl environment.
Right.
Yeah.
Like an NFC title game would be rocking.
Plus, is that a thing? Is that a known thing? Impossible to win in the Superdome when it's rocking?
Yeah, they've played NFC title games in the Super Bowl that they've lost before.
Yeah. I think that person is thinking specifically of the first game after Katrina, I think.
Maybe.
When they finally came back and it was absurdly loud. Yeah, it's not going to be a post-Katrina environment, I don't think.
Colts lost to Forrest Buckner last week, too, didn't they? Yes, they did. That should factor in,
I would imagine. That's a shame, man.
Yeah.
He's a good player.
They were bad with him out there defending the run.
Yeah.
What are they going to look like now? Dude. DeAndre Swift, take him on your more thans and prize picks. Take him if you're somebody who prop bets. DeAndre Swift, whatever the rushing total is for him this weekend, go over it.
Okay.
Yeah, go over it. That's my advice. Are you ready to do this?
Circle of Swarm.
Circle of Swarm.
You know, D'Amico always says, swarm.
What we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm.
Swarm mindset and swarm mentality.
Right, we want players to have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they do. Everything that they do.
Who's in? Who's out? It's the Payne and Pendergast Texans Circle of Swarm.
If I may put an honorary member in the Circle of Swarm, Ben Gary.
Ben.
Our producer.
You got me amped up for this Ben. Circle of Swarm.
Ben.
Yes, good job, Ben.
It was outstanding, Ben.
I'm great even job. More amped up than I was, and boy, this is going to be hard. Now, listen, listeners.
This is the best part about Ben Gary, real quick. Yeah. We didn't ask him to do that.
Right.
Like, we were just like, hey, we're going to do this Circle of Swarm. And then Ben walks in. He's like, hey, man, I made an intro for the Circle of Swarm. And we're like, that's why you're the man.
And he did do that well. Also, I'm guessing stressing the hell out because this is what I tend to do. I didn't tell Ben that I was no longer in Oregon and that I would be in studio this morning. So when I walked into the studio 5 minutes before the show, I saw all my emails for the remote connection and everything, and texts were there. So
yeah.
Ben was probably freaking the hell out.
That you were.
Yeah, so good job, Ben, doing that despite those distractions.
Hey, good job. Yeah, Ben's the man.
Hey, Ben, I'm here today, by the way. I'm in studio today.
Small detail.
I didn't notice.
So for the listeners, this is not the same as Circle of Trust. Being outside of the Circle of Swarm doesn't mean that we don't trust you or anything else like that. It's that this is the six guys that we feel are most swarm-like.
Heading into this game on Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you swarm? Are you a bannerman for swarmdom?
Right.
Yes.
Heading into the Vikings on Sunday. So the bannerman for... You want to go first? We're going
to
do this.
I get to go first?
We'll go back and forth. We'll do six. You and I will each pick three.
Okay.
Do you want me to go first?
No, I'll go first.
Okay.
Because otherwise I'll skew defense too heavily do this. So I'll take Nico Collins. Four regular season games in a row with over 100 yards receiving and at least six receptions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I put that in the pregame show notes for our numbers.
Okay, so this goes back to the Colts game in week 18 last year. And then the Tennessee game in week 17.
Yeah, I didn't fact check it, so it sounds right.
Well, no, it's for sure three, because he destroyed the Colts that day.
And he does it in such a physical fashion, such a swarm-like fashion.
He's receiver swarm.
Yeah. So, and I love, and I'll go back to, I mean, right now, I think your wide receivers and increasingly your tight ends are the best run-blocking group on this team.
Yes.
I would love that if someday the Texans' offensive line were the best blockers on the team.
Yep.
But right now, your wide receivers are, relative to their position, the best blockers on the team.
Yeah.
So, Nico Collins is first in the Circle of Swarm.
My favorite Nico Collins play, maybe amidst all of the four 100-yard games that you talk about here, and I think these should count as broken tackles, even though they were after the play was over. The one where he shoved the Colts guy, I think it's Jalen Jones, shoved him a second time out of bounds.
Yeah.
Like, he broke a tackle. And then broke another out-of-bounds tackle.
We could have had the rare offensive player being flagged for a late hit out-of-bounds.
I think that should count as a missed tackle or a broken tackle.
At the end of the year last year.
Yeah, at the end of the year last year. And then the touchdown against the Bears where he just pie-faced Jalen Johnson in the end zone and threw him to the ground. That should count as a broken tackle.
Basically took out...
In my mind.
Tyreek Stevenson got Jalen Johnson pie-faced in the end zone.
That swarm right there. All right, my turn.
Okay,
I'm going to go... My first swarm... I'm going to go Azeez Al-Shaair.
Oh, good. Yeah,
I feel
that's a good
embodies,
one.
He embodies what swarm is all about. And again, coming off a game where he had double-digit tackles, and not one of these double-digit tackles like... This is not to throw shade at Jalen Petrie, but not like Petrie as a rookie where he'd have 13 tackles because the running backs would be to the second level like that. This was double-digit tackles, tattooing Caleb Williams, coming up and making hits on DeAndre Swift, holding Swift to 1.3 yards per carry, punching Roschon Johnson in the face. That's the definition of swarm right there. He was getting swarmed. And he said, you can't swarm me. I'm a swarmer. And he punched him, boom, right in the face. 11K? Here. He just pulled it out of his pocket and threw it in the face of Goodell.
Without breaking his hand.
Yeah,
if he had broken his hand, that would have been a hard time. It would have been a hard swarm to give.
Yeah.
He did, though, vet move. He punched him in the face mask instead of the actual helmet.
It
would have been right across right in the orbital. I think he would have hit him right in the orbital.
Good.
The sweet spot.
Deserved it.
Yeah, Al-Shaair knows what he's doing.
Yep.
So
I got Azeez on my circle of swarm.
Yeah, that's a good one. That sack on that Caleb Williams hit, which I don't think for a lot of linebackers, that wouldn't have been a sack. That would have been a 1-yard gain or whatever. He closes from the middle of the field to the sideline so fast.
It's awesome.
He is he plays above his 40 time.
That's
And I think got better from week one to week two in terms of really week one was tough for the linebackers to have a perfect game because of the RPO element.
Anthony Richardson.
Yeah. So last week I think we saw more of like the vintage version of him. Okay. So we've got Nico Collins and Azeez Alshire.
Circle of swarm. We got two of six here.
There's young guys here that I really want to put in.
Yeah.
All right. I hesitate to give too much to this guy too soon.
It's okay. I know where you're going with this. I feel it.
It's between Kamari Lassiter and Jalen Petrie.
Yeah.
And Henry Toa Toa. I don't think Toa Toa has established enough, but man, he's playing way above expectations. I'm going to go Kamari Lassiter.
Kamari Lassiter. Came down to Azeez and Kamari for me.
So because Kamari a lot Lassiter. Of this, remember, I don't think Kamari Lassiter is as good as a cornerback as Derek Stingley yet, and yet there's just something about him that feels very swarm.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the fact that he's less physically gifted than Derek Stingley that makes him more swarm than Derek Stingley.
Yes, yeah.
So it's not a slight on Derek Stingley whatsoever. It's just who's the most swarm.
You can see, like, D'Amico fell in love with Kamari Lassiter the second Kamari Lassiter entered the building.
Yeah.
He's been the number one cornerback on the other side of Stingley from minicamp, I know they talk about competition, but it's never really been a competitive thing.
Right. Yeah, like Kalen Bullock has had to really earn his way on. Now it's a different situation in the position and everything.
And I'm not saying Kamari didn't earn it. He's just that much better than the guys he's been competing with.
Yeah, and I think there's something, there's the whole aura about him, including Kirby Smart telling the story about how, you know, Bullock was going to try to do the modern thing and sit out of the bowl game. Lassiter was going to try to, he was going to sit out of the bowl game, but he was going to help out at practice. He spent a day or two out of practice I can't be this guy.
Couldn't do it.
I got to go play. I got to go play with the guys, the fellas. Who cares if I break my ankle and I get drafted two rounds later or something? I got to be out there.
That would move him up like 30 slots in the draft for me. That one thing would be like, okay, fine. We thought he might make it to the third round. We're taking him in the second round.
Whenever we talk to Nick about this, he'll say the diplomatic thing, which is they don't use it as a mark against guys if they sit out the bowl game. But we've seen it with Will Anderson, because Will Anderson did the same thing.
Yeah.
He's at a school that's in the playoffs every year. Year they're not in the playoffs, Will Anderson was part of getting all those draft guys together and saying, let's play in this game.
Yeah.
These are our teammates. We've got to be out there for them. So it's not a knock against you if you don't do it,
right,
but they really like it if you do it.
All right, you didn't put Petrie in. I'm going to put Petrie in.
Okay.
Jalen Petrie is in the circle of swarm for this week. You cannot have a hit on a guy in a game, legal hit, where the guy goes on a podcast the next day and says it's the hardest I've ever been hit and not be in the first ever circle of swarm. And he's actually playing very well right now. It's not just the highlight hits. Petrie as the de facto third linebacker is what's allowed them to just run two linebackers.
And what they've been able to do as well, too. And you had pointed this out before the week last week. I thought about this after the show. You had made a really good point, and I didn't really acknowledge it. Last week, they played a lot of dime, too, on third downs especially, where that's when, you know, Jalen Petrie isn't a, he's not a classic nickelback where he's a converted cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't necessarily trust him in coverage as much as you would a lot of slot corners. So the Texans just bring an extra defensive back onto the field.
Yeah.
Because Jalen's he's a linebacker / safety.
Yeah. That's, you know, in the broader sense with all this banning the too high safety thing.
Yeah.
Barnwell actually had a really good tweet about this yesterday. He said that, you know, the fact of the matter is, like, a lot of teams are just throwing way more defensive backs out there than they used to.
You know,
they just have more athletic guys out there.
Yeah, and that's where it comes down to. Bobby Slowick talked about this. I don't want to, you know, turn this into a podcast because Bobby says some really good stuff. But just about, you know, defenses are playing that way, and it's on the offense to be able to take advantage of it with running the ball.
Yeah.
And that's where, okay, if they're going to throw six defensive backs out there, then you better be able to run the ball against them, you know?
All these people wanting to change the rules. Like, this is football.
Right.
We're now at the part of the arc where the defense is winning the chess game. And now it's up to the offense to go make the next move.
Yeah, sorry about it, Madden coordinators.
Right.
You gotta actually coach run blocking.
I hate that. That's the new thing now. Like, something, people get glitchy about something with football, so we gotta change the rules.
Oh, no, it's crazy. And it's so funny. Bobby kind of chuckled about it yesterday. I love his press conferences so much. He kind of chuckled about the fact that it comes in waves. 5 years ago, nobody plays zone anymore. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe the Steelers play so much zone.
Right.
They're such idiots. And now it's like, Now it's like everybody's like, oh, it's a scourge of the league. Everybody's playing zone.
All right, your last one. So we got Nico. So our first ever circle of swarm. Yeah. We've got Nico Collins, Azeez Alshire, Kamari Lassiter, Jalen Petrie.
Okay, so a position that wouldn't normally... Oh, boy, this is tough, actually. The two guys I want to go with right now are Kyme Fairbairn and C.J. Stroud. Not your traditional swarm positions.
No.
I fear, though, that... And I love, I love Kyme Fairbairn. I just love him. Love him.
If you don't put him in, I'm putting him in.
Okay,
so, just,
I was fearful that somehow CJ wouldn't make it in. I think CJ, there will be weeks that CJ is not in the circle of swarm. And almost, it's one of those things where I don't think CJ's going to worry about it, you know?
Can you imagine if he did?
I don't think he's going to say anything about it.
I've been doubted my whole life, man. You know?
Yeah.
Elite 11 in the draft with the S2 and Payne and Pendergast.
Left out of the circle of swarm. I think he can handle it every week.
He'll be okay.
Now and then if he's not in a circle of swarm. But his challenge these last 2 weeks has been what Pat Mahomes went through a couple years ago. It was really the year before Tyreek Hill left when everybody started playing too high against him.
And it's how they lost to the Bengals in the AFC title game that year in 2021.
You know, Pat Mahomes had to learn how to just be more conservative, do all the cliches, take what the defense gives you, bide your time, be patient. And CJ's had to do that the last couple weeks. And I think he has done it extremely well for a young player. You know, for a guy that's capable of huge passing performances, he's doing it. There's probably a part of CJ that's more proud of these last two games than of any of the Browns game last year or something. Because it's being a professional quarterback.
Yes, he understands the evolution of a quarterback.
It's being a genuine team player. So, he's assuredly in the circle of swarm this week.
Absolutely. I love that one. And he was swarming Jalen Johnson's brain when he walked up to him and said, "Hey, man, you ain't going to get me."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you watch my video I did on that yet?
No.
Oh, okay. I did a video. I went back. So... CJ says to
Jalen
Johnson.
Is it on your
Johnson,
YouTube channel?
It's on my YouTube channel.
Okay, good.
So CJ says, "You ain't going to get me."
Yeah.
You get that Palms look. So I'm like, all right, well, I got to go back and find this episode. So I went back and I watched the Richard Sherman and Jalen Johnson podcast. Mm-hmm. I found the Richard Sherman and Jalen Johnson talking about this interception he had where Troy Aikman on the broadcast and Richard Sherman both thought, yeah, you guys were in cover two, and you faked like you weren't, and then you bailed out, and you duped Josh Dobbs into throwing an interception.
Yeah.
Kamari Lassiter said, no, actually, I was in Palms. So, you know, and immediately I think,
Jalen Johnson.
And that's what CJ was talking about. Don't be giving away your secrets on the podcast.
Yeah.
So I went back and I found the interception that he was talking about, and I broke it down and showed what Palms coverage would be and all that. Yeah, the only thing I worry about is that I don't think CJ needs to tell those guys that, like, don't tell them your secrets.
Right.
Don't let them know that you're watching anywhere and everywhere.
I agree.
Although, as a lot of our listeners pointed out, maybe that's part of the psychological warfare itself. Like, hey, you might think you have little tricks up your sleeve for me, but I know them all.
They put out a lot of good stuff this week, man. The CJ mic'd up was really good. The cinematic on the game was really good. And they just did the third episode of Iron Sharpens Iron that came out. They're putting out a lot of good stuff.
I didn't do a great job of explaining Palms coverage because I wanted it to be for a mass audience.
Yeah.
I can see why some of these...
On the YouTube, I just
did a little brief explanation of what he would be doing.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably more consumable, I think.
A classic example, though, too, where this is why I always shudder whenever people like speak with alarming confidence about what defense was actually running. Like, dude, like Richard Sherman and Troy Aikman were both like
they were both duped.
There was no way for them to know exactly what it was.
Exactly.
Because Jalen Johnson recovered from it so brilliantly. So it's just you never know.
I like CJ in the circle of swarm. If you didn't put Kyme in, I was gonna put Kyme in. And I don't care that he's a kicker. When you kick 6 50-plus yard field goals in 2 weeks, many of them in non-garbage situations, they were all important.
They're all important. One, you have an offensive lineman have a false start, incredibly and very surprisingly.
Offensive lineman.
It turns from a 54-yarder to a 59-yarder, and Kyme's like, whatever.
Well, if you go back and watch the game, too, that was at a juncture in the game where the Bears were getting a little of the momentum back before halftime. They had scored the touchdown to make it 13-10, and that field goal made it 16-10 at the half. It got at least a little bit of the momentum back for the Texans in that game. I mean, after that, there were only 6 points scored the rest of the game.
Yeah. Laramie Tunsil's false starts tend to be meaningful false starts.
Yeah.
It's usually 50% of the time it's either in a critical situation or it's a drive killer.
Yeah. Do you think that we will get an offensive lineman in the circle of swarm next week? It's a pretty good circle we've got right now.
Yeah.
It's going to change week to week, though.
There might be a weight limit on the circle of swarm. These guys look healthy and happy out there. A lot of people have, have texted me in the first couple of weeks. You're like, hey, did this guy gain weight or did that guy gain weight or whatever?
And this is not this is not a system where you want your offensive lineman to be
just fat and happy.
Three biscuits
all the time,
shy of 350.
Yeah, I don't know, man. No, I don't. No, there's no swarm on the offensive line.
Right.
They showed elements of it in the first game. I want my veteran leadership on the offensive line to be super swarm. And I don't think, I think that is the position group that is most swarm depleted right
They're under a swarm microscope right now. Yeah. Okay, good. I like that. Okay, so our first ever circle of swarm, Nico, Azeez Alshire, Kamari Lassiter, Jalen Petrie, CJ, and Kaimi Fairbairn. I like that. That's a good six.
It's either a good sign or a bad sign that a kicker is on your circle
of swarm.
And
we have a quarterback and a kicker in our circle of swarm.
Yeah.
Hey, it is what it is, man. They're 2-0. That's all that, at the end of the day, that's what matters. All right, up next, I mentioned it earlier, Caleb Gate. Caleb Williams, CJ Stroud, interaction that will not go away. Dan Orlovsky had the best take on this that I've heard anybody have, and you're going to hear that coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the feedback is in. People like the Circle of Swarm. Text message, I like this. Circle of Swarm is good. Circle of Swarm, I like it. I miss most of it, but is there a certain amount of people you can add? We have six people.
Thank you, Ben, for turning my mic on. We're going to keep it at six.
Six, yeah, because we had a few people say, hey, you guys might have to bump the list up to eight. And I respect the sentiment. It means you enjoy the segment and you want to hear us gush about more people. Yeah. And there's a few people that got a little Circle of Swarm, like shrapnel.
Honorary mention. Yeah, like, they got a single vote.
Well, yeah. You know? Well, you mentioned Henry Toa Toa.
Right, yeah.
You know, his name came up, but he's just not in the circle.
It's like when you read these articles and they get also, one vote or something
right,
like that.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so it'll change, but it'll be week by week.
Yep.
And ideally, you're on a team where, it sucks that we can only name six, but these are the hard decisions that general managers like Seth and Sean need to make.
That's this team. Yeah, we are the co-GMs of the Circle of Swarm. So if you missed it, the Circle of Swarm heading into week three here for a Football Friday. Nico Collins, Azeez Alshire, Kamari Lassiter, Jalen Petrie, CJ Stroud, and yes, Kaimi Fairbairn made the Circle of Swarm.
The Bairnster.
The Bairnster.
Bairnstein Bear is what I call him.
He's a Fairy Bee, yes.
Fair Bairnstein Bear.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, a lot of people enjoying the Circle of Swarm. We appreciate that.
I feel like Fairbairn might end up being a guy that plays until he's 45 years old, one of these kickers kicks a long, long time, and all of a sudden we'll look up and we'll be like, oh wow, he's one of the best players in Texans history, and he kind of did it under the radar.
He's 13 points away from becoming the all-time leading scorer in Texans history. How about that? He's in his eighth season. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's a good question.
Kickers have more records like that than you realize.
Totally.
Always.
Yeah.
At any given time, like a kick, some random kicker is the best kicker in NFL history. I try not to look into that too. I judge my kickers by how much do I trust this guy to kick a 59-yard field goal.
Yeah.
And right now, I trust him implicitly.
Indeed. Do we have CJ and Caleb talking to each other on the field? Just give me a thumbs up when you get that. I just want to have context here for those because we probably have some people who have not heard that yet, but we've had a lot of different takes on that. So for those who missed it, CJ Stroud, Caleb Williams meet on the field after the game. CJ's mic'd up, and this is what the interaction sounded like.
Good job out there, bro.
Yeah. Hey, keep going.
Stop taking those hits. Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yep.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
So we're not going to dig as deep on this as we did yesterday. We hit it a few times yesterday. It was still the number one trending topic yesterday.
Yeah, people latched onto this.
They really did. And they took sides, which was wild, too. A lot of people, the first side that I saw taken in this was anti-Caleb for the disrespect of walking away from CJ Stroud mid-advice.
Yeah.
And admittedly, that's because the first reactions I'm seeing are probably largely Texans people that are getting curated onto my Twitter timeline. By the time the national media got its meat hooks into it and the Chicago media got their meat hooks into it, it had turned into CJ overstepping his bounds.
Right, yeah.
Little broing him.
Yeah. I do think there's been a couple of whiplashes going on here.
Yes.
I think one is that CJ got nothing but love and adulation all offseason long to the point where I think most fan bases are like, all right, yeah, cool. It's a good story and everything. Now that the rubber meets the road and you're playing these teams or they're in competition with you.
And the Texans might be good.
I think they're looking at CJ like, all right, bro, you haven't done anything yet. Yes. What the hell? Oh,
that's it. That is what they're doing.
Yeah.
And with Caleb,
there's already the built-in narrative that he's just not wired the right way or what have you. So, but the whiplash with Caleb, I think, is I've seen people start to take up for Caleb in this.
Yeah.
As if, and again, we can't state this enough. These two are good friends.
Right.
There is no beef between them or anything.
No.
CJ didn't look at it as being disrespect or anything, but man, people love a storyline.
Dan Orlovsky had the best take on this so far from ESPN. This was on Get Up yesterday morning, I believe. Here's Dan Orlovsky.
First of all, leadership has no rank, and I think you see great leadership right there by CJ Stroud, even though he's in his second year in the NFL, he's had success. And that's one of the hardest things at that position to go do is have instant success. He's trying to be a good mentor in that moment. He also has eyeballs. He watches. Yes. What did I say Monday morning? Caleb competed his freaking butt off.
Right.
Like that's the one great that you take away. He watched Caleb go out there, and that's why he said, hey, man, don't take those shots. And I also appreciate Caleb sitting there as the competitor saying, I don't want to hear this from anybody right now. I wanted to win this freaking game. He knows the magnitude of the situation. National TV against the hot shot young quarterback that people comp him to. So, of course, he doesn't want to hear it from anybody. I don't think that there's either party at fault in that situation.
The that Chicago it fault. Is, yeah, like it, even saying the fault it, in that situation, like it's a crime scene or
it
something.
It is a little ironic that Orlovsky is the neutral voice on all this.
Yeah.
Because Dan has gotten very good his first few years on TV of picking a side.
Yeah.
And just grabbing onto it and just holding onto it for dear life.
Yeah, like an angry chihuahua.
Yeah. So
I think the leadership has no rank part is the one that is probably most relevant here, because when we see that Chicago radio host or Mike Florio saying, like, well, what's the protocol here? I mean, they're the same chronological age. What's in the unwritten rules of football? Have we ever looked at a good young quarterback like CJ Stroud and been like, I can't believe he's speaking that way to Nico Collins. Nico's older than him.
Right.
You know, like, well, I can't believe, you know, Tank Dell's only a year younger than CJ Stroud. Why would CJ correct him on a route or something?
Look out for Diggs.
Yeah.
He's 9 years older than CJ.
Yeah, like, it's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard, honestly. Because it's not, those guys aren't out there comparing their birth certificates to see who's actually got
perfect.
Is that the rank? Like, oh no, you're only allowed to be a leader if you're 4 years older than somebody.
Right.
If you're not 4 years older, I do think this is why Bears fans probably got extra up in arms about this. And I understand it. I get it. I think largely this is as unbiased as I can be. If I try to look at this objectively, CJ just has more leadership traits than Caleb Williams does. I mean, CJ, to a large degree, I think most people in around the NFL would agree with me that, yeah, CJ just more obviously displays classic quarterback leadership traits than Caleb Williams
does.
Yes. And Caleb still feels, in a lot of regards, like a boy amongst men and a guy that's still trying to figure out exactly what it means to play in the NFL and all of the other stuff. And I think just like when we would get up in arms when people would make accurate criticisms of James Harden, that's where Bears fans are right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good comparison. I think it's a good, you know, this is what I would love to go back and find. And it's probably, that's Friday, Saturday. Now I got a couple days to do this. It's particularly for the people in Chicago. Guys like Dan Bernstein, who's the host that said that CJ was being, quote, performative.
Bernsperm.
Being performative. What was his take on Caleb Williams telling his much older teammates to clean up the locker room?
Oh, right,
at the beginning of training camp. Yeah. Because if the people in Chicago who are angry with CJ Stroud for little broing Caleb Williams, if they had a take that Caleb was showing leadership by telling his much older teammates to clean up their stuff in the locker room, they are hypocrites.
The whole thing about
that
Caleb
is a double standard.
And I didn't like weighing in on that because you never know the tone of voice or anything that somebody
did. I'm gonna now.
But, I mean, there's an element in that where CJ was very open about when he was a young guy on this team and he was still competing for the starting quarterback job. You got to be...
Got to earn it.
You got to kind of... Yeah, you got to earn their respect and all of that. And it got to a point where the veteran leaders were coming to him and saying, yeah, we trust you. Like, you can be that guy.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to just the human side of it, and maybe that's unteachable, of just understanding you got to pick your battles and your moments to where you start establishing your leadership. That's... And I don't even... Like, again, I don't know how he said it or what it was, but yeah, that's a little bit of what I'm talking about. I think CJ's got a better feel for that stuff.
All right, let's circle back to the Astros here in the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to do Five Reasons I Hate You, Minneapolis edition, Minnesota edition, coming up at 8:25. But the Astros, some of Dana Brown's work over the last few weeks, post-trade deadline, is coming back to roost in a really, really nice way for this team. And this is a trend that is going to get this guy into the rotation for the playoffs. We'll talk about that coming up next.